From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante. It's often said that elephants never forget, and there's some really nifty evidence out there that our really big mammalian cousins have really long memories. A few weeks ago on this program, we chatted with the neuroscientist Sharon Ranganath about human memory, which of course is also very long. And so presumably that means that mammals that have evolved even more closely to humans might also have very long and very detailed memories. But that's not an idea that has been particularly well tested. In no small part because, well, we're not this guy.
I'd study every creature's language, so I could speak to all of them on sight. If friends said, can he talk in crab or maybe pelican? You'd say like hell he can, and you'd be right. And if you're just...
The thing is that it's not very easy to ask animals what they remember. And so researchers have to set up experiments to infer memory. And that's what Laura Lewis did with some chimps and bonobos, who, of course, are our closest non-human relatives. In a recently published study in the Proceedings of the National Academies of Sciences, Lewis described an experiment in which these apes were offered pictures of other chimps and bonobos that they had lived with years earlier, but hadn't seen in a long time. And not only was it pretty clear that the apes were more interested in the images of the ones they once knew, but they also spent more time looking at the individuals with whom they'd shared more friendly encounters. So apes don't just remember, they seem to remember fondly. And Lewis thinks this might be important for our understanding of why and how humans evolved to use memory. Lewis is a biological anthropologist and comparative psychologist in the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley, where she explores how humans and other great apes have evolved to form, maintain, and deepen our social relationships. Laura Lewis, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Laura, this story sort of starts with a friend of yours. His name is Kendall. Tell me a little bit about Kendall.
So Kendall is a chimpanzee who lives at the North Carolina Zoo. I had the opportunity to meet and work with Kendall when I was just actually 19 years old as an undergraduate at Duke University. So as an undergrad at Duke, I had the wonderful opportunity to work as a research assistant in Professor Brian Hare's lab in the Evolutionary Anthropology Department. And there, I worked with a PhD student of Brian's named Chris Crepena, who was studying chimpanzees' cognition at the time. And he hired me as his research assistant to help him explore cognition and specifically social cognition in chimpanzees. And that's where I met Kendall. I was so excited and I really had no idea what to expect and was really blown away when I met these chimpanzees. I mean, looking in their eyes, looking at their hands and their thumbs and their fingernails and realizing how similar they are to us was mind-blowing and so exciting. Kendall is a very special chimp. Socially, there were some interesting kind of quirks about him. And he loved to look at my fingernails and the ring on my finger. He was really fascinated by these things. Of course, we couldn't touch each other, so he wasn't fully touching me at all. But he was really, when I showed him my fingernails and my ring, he was fascinated, just as I was fascinated with his fingers and his hands. So we would often kind of show each other our fingernails and kind of show each other our rings, flip them over and backwards and things. And it was in this way that I felt that I formed, you know, an interesting and kind of deep bond with Kendall.
And then as if like having this undergraduate job wasn't cool enough, then you get this opportunity to study baboons in Africa. And so you go away for a little bit. You're gone for a few months. And then when you got back, you noticed something.
So I went to study baboons in South Africa for 3 months, almost 4 months in the summer. And when I returned, I was nervous. I was nervous that Kendall and the other chimps wouldn't remember me. And it was interesting because I had this thought. I clearly remembered them. I could remember their faces. I could remember their names, their little quirks in their behavior. But I didn't know if they would remember me. I thought they would, but I didn't know. But when I returned, 4 months later after not seeing them, Kendall came right over and would inspect my fingernails again. So it seemed intuitively to me like they did remember me from their behaviors and how they treated me. But again, this was just my own intuition. I didn't know for sure whether they remembered me, but it got me thinking and wondering about, you know, about their long-term memory for others.
So this got you thinking, but it took a while before you were able to turn those thoughts into the experiment that you recently published. In the meantime, though, you were doing all this other work that laid the groundwork for this, including experimenting with eye tracking technology. And I want you here to just talk about the eye tracking part of this, because this is really fascinating how this works.
We started using this eye tracking technology, and it is an infrared camera that is placed below a computer screen that can then track where a human is looking on the screen at any given time. Now, our wonderful, fantastic colleague, Dr. Fumihiro Kano, was in Japan at the time working with great apes, and he had the amazing intuition that this eye-tracking technology that was originally developed to use with humans could actually be used with our closest cousins, chimpanzees and bonobos. Because their eyes are so similar to ours, their morphology is so similar to ours, he thought, why not try it with these apes to see if the eye trackers originally designed to use for humans could also pick up other great apes' eyes.
Yeah, but there's a problem with chimps and bonobos, which is that, well, I mean, this might be a problem with humans too. You know, they sometimes have trouble sitting still and focusing on something, and you needed them to do that long enough to get good data. It turns out juice is a really good enticement for getting them to sit there and like stare at a screen for a little while longer, right?
That's exactly right. So with adult humans, we can just ask, can you please sit still, keep your head still, and look at the screen. With babies, they are definitely more wiggly, but you can have them sitting on your lap and you can help hold them still, and that helps. With chimps and bonobos, you can't just ask, hey, can you please sit still and look at the screen? You cannot hold them. You definitely can't hold them on your lap so they don't wiggle. So my colleague, who is also an author on the paper, Dr. Fumihiro Kano, came up with what I think is a genius and very simple way to keep the chimps and bonobos staying still during this eye tracking procedure. We have a little straw that enters their enclosure through which there's a little bit of diluted juice that drips through. And so the apes just kind of naturally almost know that they can sip through the straw to get the juice. And in this way, their heads are held very still. So they're just drinking the juice, their heads are still, but their eyes can still move. And that's exactly what we need with eye tracking. In order to get accurate measurements, we need your head still and just your eyes moving so that we can really measure where an individual is looking on the screen.
You used this similar technique to this for a paper that was published in 2021 that showed that chimps spent more time studying images of male chimps and bonobos spent more time studying images of female bonobos, which is particularly interesting because males typically occupy the highest ranks in chimp tribes and females typically occupy the highest ranks in bonobo tribes. They were like staring at their potential leaders for longer.
So what we were comparing is their attention towards their group mates versus strangers. And that's where we find this difference, that for chimps, they didn't really differentiate much between female group mates and strangers, but they were looking a lot longer at their male group mates compared to male strangers. And then exactly as you said, the opposite is true in bonobos. Bonobos were looking longer at images of their female group mates compared to female strangers. So we do think that their dominance patterns have shaped their attention patterns in similar but different ways, right? So they're all looking longer at their groupmates of the dominant sex. And it's similar to what we see in humans. We as humans are paying more attention to dominant and prestigious individuals. So our attention is also shaped by dominance patterns in our society.
So then you worked with zoos and animal sanctuaries all around the world to gather information and images of apes that had lived together at some time in the past, but were now living in three facilities, one in Scotland, one in Japan, and one in Belgium. Okay, so let's set up the methodology for this new study and tell me if I've got this right. You've got this screen, you wheel it in, there's this juice there to entice the ape to approach and stay for a bit. And then once it's sort of like sitting there happily sucking on its grapefruit juice, you project images of apes that these test subjects once lived with and ones they didn't, and you're tracking their eyes as they do this.
Yep. And what we're using with the eye tracker, we're actually asking quite a simple question. And we set it up this way to be simple enough that we could just clearly tell, are they looking longer at the images of their former groupmates, or do they look longer at the images of their strangers? So we had one hypothesis is that since they look longer at their current groupmates of the dominant sex, we thought if they recognized these individuals, if they had some sort of memory for these individuals with whom they lived many years ago, they might also look longer at the images of their previous groupmates as compared to the images of strangers.
And they did, right? I mean, they looked substantially longer at their previous groupmates, even in the case of apes that they lived with like decades earlier.
They did. They did look significantly longer at the images of their previous groupmates. A small sample from a bonobo named Louise, who hadn't seen her sister, Loretta, or nephew, Aaron, in over 26 years. Now, we were only able to collect a few trials from Louise with these individuals, but we found that she was also looking much longer at the images of her sister and nephew as compared to the images of the strangers, which suggests that there is some form of recognition, that she has some form of recognition.
And were these old pictures of them, or were these new pictures of them that she did? Does that make sense? Were they pictures that were taken 25 years ago or pictures that were taken more recently?
So all of the pictures we showed were pictures of the individuals at the time that they had either before they died or left the group. So it's what they looked like in the past. But I think you're getting at a really interesting question, and it's something we don't know. What if we showed them pictures of the individuals that they had lived with before, their previous groupmates, pictures of what they look like now? Could they extrapolate and be able to tell, hey, that was Loretta, who I lived with 20 years ago. She looks a little older, her hair is a little more gray, maybe she's missing some hair on top. But could they extrapolate and could they be able to tell? It's also an interesting question for us, right? If you haven't seen someone since third grade and you bump into them in the street, might you be able to recognize them, right? Can you tell, even though you haven't seen them in, let's say, 20 or 30 years? Could you tell that that's the same individual?
I honestly think about this all the time. I think about this all the time. Like, how many people do I pass, have I passed in an airport, on an airplane, you know, in a football stadium, whatever, that I know, but I just don't recognize because it's been so long?
Yeah, I think that these are important questions. And personally, I think it's really exciting from these results to realize, hey, they have really long-term memory, just like we do. As humans, we have incredibly long-term social memory. We can remember others' faces for at least 30 years. Some evidence points to us remembering faces for almost 48 years. So we have really long-term memory for others.
The eye tracking offers some really good quantitative data. And I know that the evaluators of the eye tracking data were blinded to the animals' histories. But I am wondering about this. When you go back and you watch the videos of this, you watch the chimps and the bonobos going through the experiment, does it seem obvious to you in their other mannerisms beyond just where their eyes were looking?
So I ran all of this research myself. So I was directly sitting in front of these chimps and bonobos as they were looking at the images of their previous groupmates. So I got a front row seat to their reactions. And a lot of them didn't make so many kind of behavioral reactions or many obvious reactions. But there's one mother-daughter pair that really stood out to me. Their names are Eva and Edith. They're chimpanzees at the Edinburgh Zoo. And both of them, sometimes when these images of their former groupmates were on the screen, they would stop drinking the juice, kind of cock their head to the side and just stare. And it was incredible to watch this juice dripping out in front of them, right? Chimpanzees are very food motivated. So for them to ignore some sweet juice coming out of a straw and to just stare at these images, personally, I found that really compelling. And it really seems like there was something going on in terms of recognition. And it wouldn't be until later when I actually was able to analyze the data that it was, in fact, exactly what we had thought, that they were, in some ways, recognizing their former groupmates.
There's this other really interesting element of this, because these animals' caretakers kept pretty meticulous records of which apes got along with one another and which ones they have more contentious relationships with. This is pretty common in zoo settings because you don't want animals beating up on each other, fighting unnecessarily, or, you know, hurting each other. And so you knew in the past which ones were friendly. And it turns out the ones that were friendly in the past, their photos got more attention in the study.
So we went to the different institutions where our participants in the study had lived with these previous groupmates. And we asked the keepers and researchers there to quantify the relationships between the participants in our study and their previous groupmates. So first, we actually had to go out and get this data. And this is another tidbit, maybe just a nugget for our listeners to think about, is we had to actually ask keepers to remember these relationships between the participants in our study and their previous groupmates. So this was actually keepers, it wasn't data that they had collected in the past. This was keepers actually remembering, oh yeah, Louise and Louis were great friends. They were quite close. But Louise and Eva were not very close at all, you know? So we actually asked zookeepers. They're very kind. Zookeepers are wonderful, wonderful people. And so they actually gave us this data, where then we actually could quantify the levels of positive interactions and the levels of negative interactions between the participants in our study and the previous groupmates who they were looking at on the screen. So then we could tell, okay, certain individuals had more positive relationships with some of their previous groupmates. And in that way, we could analyze and compare looking time to the images of their previous groupmates with the type of relationship they had with these individuals. And we found exactly what you said. We found that participants looked longer at the images of their previous groupmates with whom they had more positive social relationships, or whom we might call their friends.
So this is all fun and cool, but what do you think it means for the evolution of these animals and also for these other apes, the big, you know, mostly hairy ones that were doing these experiments? What do we know based on this that is going to help us better understand why we remember what we remember?
I mean, it seems to me that memory is pretty foundational for having complex social relationships and a social environment in which you might not see everyone in your group at all times, right? So chimpanzees and bonobos live in these large societies of 100, sometimes up to 150 individuals, but they're not all together at all times of the day. So at certain times of the day, they'll break up into smaller parties to go foraging or to explore the edge of their territory. And so they'll be in these smaller groups, and then they might not see other individuals in their communities for a while. So you can imagine having memory of who's in your group and also who might not be in your group that you come across. That could be really, really helpful information to have, and a capacity that's really important for survival and for maintaining social relationships, right? Especially for species like chimpanzees, where they can have pretty violent interactions with out-group members, right? So with individuals who are not in their group, they might only see these individuals every few months or potentially every few years. But it would be really helpful to remember, hey, that guy over there is not in my group. And the last time we interacted, we didn't have such a pretty interaction, right? So you can imagine that actually having long-term memory for others would be helpful for forming and maintaining positive social relationships with others, and also avoiding some negative interactions with others. So we think that this might be kind of foundational for forming more and more complex societies that might rely more and more on kind of more distant, both in terms of space and time, more distant interactions, right? So in our own human evolution, we moved from living in groups of 100 individuals that are, you know, all living in the same place to kind of having more and more distant interactions, right? We became much more nomadic. We started trading with individuals of other groups that lived in completely different places across time, right? And so in order to form these types of cooperative cultures and cultural traditions and histories, it was probably pretty important that we could remember other individuals across space and time. So that's what we're thinking, is that it probably was foundational. Having this long-term memory is probably foundational for some of our really complex cooperative tendencies that we have as humans.
We know that language plays a big role in human memory, but this experiment suggests that language isn't necessarily why we have such long memories. It might accentuate it, perhaps, but it's there beyond linguistic connections.
Yeah, so you can imagine language kind of building on the memory capacities that we already have. Having language in terms of the human language that we have is not necessary for remembering others over a long period of time, over decades, right?
We mentioned this all got started with Kendall, the chimp at the North Carolina Zoo, who first got you thinking about memory. Kendall has a bit of a sad story. He was taken from his mother as an infant. He was sold to this entertainment company. He was raised by humans to be a performer. And then that career got cut short. It only lasted 6 years, because he had become too big and too strong and too willful. And so it was decided, you know, Kendall can no longer be suitable for being a performer. And so then he winds up in a zoo, and he's been working on learning to just be a chimp since then. And so I wonder, when you think about Kendall, knowing what you know and what you're exploring about chimp memories, how do you think Kendall thinks about the past?
You know, and I actually work with a lot of chimpanzees who have been rescued from different situations, being in the entertainment industry, being pets. We don't know for sure, but based on at least these results that we found, it's likely that they do remember things from their past, at least individuals from their past. It's hard to say whether they can remember specific events. I would guess that they do, but we don't have the data to show that yet, that they have really long-term memory for events in the past. But I would guess that they do, and I would guess that these might have long-term effects on their mental well-being, right? That if they've experienced adversity, if they've experienced being alone, if they've experienced being poached or hunted in the wild, or if they've experienced deforestation with humans cutting down their forest home, right? I would hypothesize that they can remember not only individuals from their past, but also events from their past, and that these especially adverse events might have effects on their well-being later down the line, just as we know adverse effects in humans have effects on our well-being down the line.
You first met Kendall almost a decade ago, and one of the things that really jogged you to explore chimp and bonobo memories was this interaction that you had with Kendall after just 3 months away. Have you been back to that zoo? Does Kendall still remember you? If you went back there, what do you think would happen?
I haven't been back. I haven't been back in a long time. Now with the results in mind that we have, I bet he would at least remember my face. I bet he would remember my face. I'm not sure exactly what would happen. I think we would probably have a pretty friendly interaction, but I'm just not sure. So hopefully I'll have the opportunity to go back at some point soon, and test this out.
That's Laura Lewis. She's a biological anthropologist and comparative psychologist in the Department of Psychology at UC Berkeley and the lead author of a new paper on chimp and bonobo memory. Laura, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been so much fun talking with you.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio, and if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us on UPR every Thursday morning at 10:30. If you miss us then, you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University and from listeners like you. You can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaFont. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.